Hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to VFX World. Had a little bit of an issue with LinkedIn just there. What's going on? Not happy. It says LinkedIn apparently doesn't allow streaming at 60 frames per second, but we're live on LinkedIn right now, so who knows what's going on. Hello, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to VUX World. I'm Kane Sims, and I've just come back from Germany, actually. Very interesting time in Germany. The Germans know how to do AI pretty effectively. It was the Cognigy Experience Summit, and I was hearing from all kinds of different brands, from Lufthansa, Toyota, Adidas, Schwarz Group, which has Lidl, and Kaufland, which is a huge supermarket in Germany. And all of them are doing AI in the right way, I can tell you that much. I'm going to be doing a lot more. I'm going to cover some of these stories and case studies in the next few weeks, so do pay attention to that if you like. Definitely. Also, I'm wearing the Unpassed t-shirt, as you need to do at this time of year. Unpassed tickets are on sale right now, and if you are interested in being a part of the global AI community, global conversational AI community, then get yourself to Unpass. We will be covering all kinds of content, best practice for designing and building and launching and deploying and operationalizing conversational AI and AI agents. We've got speakers from Google, speakers from Amazon, we've got speakers from Microsoft, we've got some top brands there like Lloyd's Banking Group and a whole bunch of interesting content, Hugging Face and stuff like that. And so if you are either on the technical side or the design side, however you do this, if you're more technical or you're more creative, then this is going to have something for you. We've got a design track, we've got a developer track, we've got a whole load of crossover content as well, and it is going to be the single best, if I do say so myself, the single best gathering of conversational AI and AI enthusiasts and professionals that the UK certainly has ever seen. Maybe that the world has ever seen. Who knows? You can go to unparsedconf.com to get your early bird tickets right now. There's going to be three different parties on every single night. There's an open bar, free food. I say free food. You kind of need to buy a ticket first. But once you have your ticket, you don't need to do anything else other than turn up and everything else is laid on. You will have an absolutely amazing time. So please do join us for that. There you go. Unparsedconf.com. Be there or be oblong, as they say. Now then, my next guest today is Pete Kemp. Now, some of you might know Pete from LinkedIn. He's been on LinkedIn for quite a while. He used to be running EBM. I don't know, I haven't messed that up, Pete, have I? It is EBM, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, EBM.
That's right, EBM. And lots of experience in conversational AI. And I'm excited for you to join me today, Pete. Thank you so much for coming here and gracing us with your presence, my friend.
No, not at all. Thanks ever so much for having me. It's a massive privilege to kind of join you today. I jumped into the conversational AI space just over kind of 4 years ago now. And I think you're probably one of the first people that I kind of started following as I was really kind of getting into the space. And I've been following yourself and your content ever since, and enormously kind of helpful in keeping me up to speed on the kind of latest and greatest.
Wicked. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's nice to know that I'm not sitting here talking to myself and that it's working at some level.
No, I can attest to that for sure.
Nice one. Cool. So as I mentioned, you were at EBM. You're now not at EBM. You're at FSP. Maybe we can start with a little bit of an introduction about FSP, about yourself, and also we can get into, you know, EBM and what EBM did and does and stuff like that, and your experiences and that. So maybe we'll just kind of start with some of those introductions, if you like, Pete.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, as you mentioned, my name's Pete Kemp, and I'm a principal consultant in the advisory team in FSP. And FSP is a digital transformation consultancy, predominantly based here in the UK, with offices in Reading and up in Scotland. But we also have an office over in Barcelona that I'm hoping to visit one of these days. But we kind of have a full range of capabilities across kind of digital consultancy. So kind of vision and strategy, the modern workplace, which is going to be kind of bit about what I'm would like to kind of talk about today, but then also kind of cloud engineering, data and AI, cybersecurity, and change and adoption. But as you met, so I've been with FSP since September. But as you mentioned, I was managing director for EBM before moving over to FSP.
Nice. And so maybe for context, EBM. So would you describe EBM as a consultancy, an agency, a system integrator, like how a technology provider? How would you describe EBM in your experience?
Absolutely.
In the past?
I would describe it as a conversational AI consultancy. and product, in fact. So we had a chatbot management product, which integrated with a lot of the kind of natural language processing providers, kind of Google's Dialogflow, Microsoft, IBM, amongst others. And yeah, in the kind of the 4 years that I worked with the team and managed it, we grew a really kind of fantastic kind of client base, working across all sorts of different use cases and different industries. And still very much going strong.
Nice.
Going strong today.
Nice. Cool. So what's your role and remit then at FSP?
Yeah, so I mean, as a principal consultant advisory team, working across quite a few different accounts with a number of different focuses. But I think with my background, first of all, in kind of conversational AI, but I actually started my career out, such as it is, in kind of modern workplace development and then kind of consultancy, predominantly focused in the kind of the Microsoft era. So the stuff I'm most excited about at the moment is helping our kind of a number of our clients, quite different organizations, launching Copilot for Microsoft 365. So helping kind of support along that journey.
Wicked.
Yeah.
And specifically clients such as...
Very good.
That's a bit of an in joke there. We're not allowed to name clients. So I thought I'd see whether I could put one past you there.
You very nearly did. What I will mention is to say, like, quite different organizations of different kind of sizes and scales and industries and focuses. So it's quite interesting to see the kind of commonalities across that experience, but also some of the kind of the differences in rolling out Copilot for Microsoft 365, and in fact, kind of generative AI tools in that modern workplace kind of context.
Mm-hmm. And so we'll definitely get into the Copilot stuff. How do you, I mean, you mentioned it was part of your background as well in terms of modern workplace. And so how would you define the modern workplace then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good question and very kind of, and sort of quite wide ranging. But I think from my focus and experience, it's around the kind of the digital tools that provide that enable employees to kind of do their best work. And as I say, my kind of focus has been predominantly around kind of helping the adoption of Microsoft tools. But obviously, you know, there's a wide range of kind of different digital tools that kind of provide that support employees across their kind of day-to-day work and workflow.
And so I suppose part of that, would you even consider something like Microsoft Teams and like 365 generally speaking kind of part of the modern workplace, because that's getting people able to work remote and all that kind of stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And obviously the kind of the pandemic, which feels like a very distant memory now, really kind of expedited a lot of organizations kind of moving into and adopting those tools and kind of necessitated it with a lot of us kind of working remotely now. But yeah, absolutely, the kind of full suite of the kind of Microsoft 365 tools, anything from Teams to SharePoint, some of your users will have heard of Loop, Viva Engage, which used to be Yammer. But also the kind of the Office tools. And all of these are kind of quite relevant to Copilot for Microsoft 365, because what Microsoft has started to do is integrate Copilot into each of these experiences to provide support across kind of common tasks within each of those applications.
And maybe we should begin with a definition of Copilot, because Microsoft seems to slap Copilot on everything, so it can be a bit difficult to figure out like which Copilot are they talking about here. Generally, I think that term Copilot has also been grabbed hold of by the conversational AI industry, and so now Copilots are what was called Agent Assist is now Copilot, and you know, coding companions are now Copilots and stuff like that. So. Yep. And I know Microsoft have now got the Copilot Studio, which allows you to kind of build stuff. And so when you're referring to Copilot, for those that are tuning in, what is it specifically that you're referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right. And it does cause some confusion. And they have sort of sort of swapped out the and changed the names for a few of these tools as well. And as you mentioned, Power, what used to be kind of Power Virtual Agents, has now been kind of integrated into, or sort of wound into, the kind of Copilot Studio, the wider Copilot Studio. So yeah, Microsoft has kind of quite, as you mentioned, has kind of wide range of different kind of Copilot and generative AI options. So there's, for instance, kind of Copilot for Dynamics 365, which is obviously around kind of helping different business functions such as like sales and marketing and supply chain. There's Copilot for security, which kind of helps kind of detect and investigate and respond to kind of cyber attacks. And many of your listeners will be kind of familiar with Copilot for GitHub, which obviously helps kind of developers to kind of write code. Where my kind of focus has been recently is on Copilot for Microsoft 365, which in a nutshell is a kind of AI-powered productivity tools that helps you, as I mentioned, with various tasks across the Microsoft 365 applications. So things like, we'll get into it, but kind of writing emails, kind of creating reports, scheduling meeting, kind of gathering insights from your kind of day-to-day documents and data.
Mm. And so does that require, you know, is this something that is almost like out of the box for Microsoft? Because it's got 365, it's got Teams, it's got all SharePoint, it's got all of these capabilities that all have presumably common tasks that people are trying to do with them. Mm. And so is the Copilot for 365, is that sort of like something where like you turn it on and there's a whole bunch of use cases like you just mentioned, or is it something that actually, like the kind of Copilot Studio, you actually have to go and configure and build out your use cases for your specific needs?
Yeah, so it's an add-on to your existing kind of Microsoft 365 license. So if you for those listeners who know, if you have an E5 or E3 license, then you can buy Microsoft Copilot for Microsoft 365 licenses, and then it's kind of an additional add-on. So an additional cost at this point is about kind of $30 per user per month. So you know, depending on the organization, it can be quite a significant investment. Mm. But the actual kind of there's a number of different kind of technical prerequisites, but the actual kind of turning it on and kind of making it available to users is reasonably straightforward. There's quite a lot of kind of key considerations around kind of some of the kind of the benefits and risks and enabling your kind of teams to make the most out of it. But yeah, as you say, unlike kind of Copilot Studio options, there's no development or extensive setup required.
Mm, that's good. And so for a client of yours, then you turn it on, you pay for $30 per user, whatever it might be. What are the kind of things that they're trying to achieve with it? You alluded to some of it there. Is there very specifically sort of like problems they're trying to solve? Like, we want to decrease the time that we spend in our email inbox? Or is it a kind of like, okay, we know that all of this stuff collectively makes us more productive, we want to experiment with how to do that? Like, how are clients tending to approach it? Do they have a specific problem they're trying to solve, or are they trying to just utilize all of the tools because they understand that it's going to help them be more productive generally?
Yeah, absolutely. So in fact, kind of, so Copilot came out, was released in kind of to early access adopters early last year, and Microsoft did a kind of quite extensive study around sort of feedback from the benefits that are being provided, and the benefits around kind of, as you mentioned, kind of productivity, but also kind of creativity and collaboration. And obviously those are kind of key benefits that the organizations that we're working with kind of want to see across their rollout. But I think certainly the kind of the approach that we're taking is running kind of controlled trials, quite kind of purposely cross-functional trials across their organizations to uncover those more kind of particular use cases. So if there's any kind of particular processes or applications where it's adding that kind of particular value, understanding those and capturing them, and then using those kind of learnings to then kind of share it wider across the organization.
Mm. And is there an example you could think of one of those situations where, like, as I said, it's going to have some out of the box functionality that, you know, you can just start using. But what kind of would be an example of one of those areas where, you know, maybe you've kind of done a bit of research, and you've done some shadowing or whatever, or ran some focus groups or what have you, and you've found specific problems to be solved that this can sort of solve? Have you got any example use cases where, you know, you've managed to find things that you wouldn't expect to find, sort of thing, in terms of how it can be used?
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's a lot of... there's a lot of kind of instant, and particularly depending upon which application you're using it, there's some very instant kind of benefits and value that's provided. I think the one that kind of resonate with most users is capturing meeting minutes and meeting tasks. So much like you, when you record a meeting, you kind of hit Copilot, and then it automatically starts taking a transcript of that meeting. And as you're kind of in that meeting, particularly if you've missed something, or you want to kind of prompt it to ask for a sort of recommended follow-up, you can then ask a question, and then as you're kind of in the meeting, it will provide that kind of that assistance. But also then kind of following up and kind of recapping the meeting. Similarly in Word, if you've got kind of very long kind of document and you're going to want to pull out sort of particular topics or themes to then kind of take forward or kind of summarize, it's provided myself, apart from anything else, kind of lots of enormous amount of value there. But I think the kind of the big distinction from ChatGPT or Bard or what have you is obviously it's got the power of the large language model, but it's grounded in your data. So the data that is captured by the Microsoft 365 graph, and as such provides a kind of enormous amount of benefits to your day to day. So for instance, to kind of come back to your question, if, for instance, depending on the company, you might be responding to an RFI, and you have a whole bank of kind of documents or lessons learned from RFIs that you've kind of provided from before, gives I don't know if the same is kind of true for yourself, but like when you kind of start that blank page, ChatGPT and what have you can be enormously helpful in kind of getting over that kind of creative barrier. So drawing on that content that you already have, it can provide much more kind of personalized and recommendations to kind of get you going.
So partly one of the things, correct me if I'm wrong then, partly one of the things that you're doing then at FSP is working with businesses to figure out things like that. So for example, one department is legal, and they spend all of their time reviewing and creating contracts. And so you would basically, as part of the deployment, one use case might be you take all of their previous contracts that they've got saved in SharePoint or wherever over the last X number of years, ingest all of those things, do presumably some form of kind of like training of the model, so that then next time someone comes to write a contract, you can do things like proofread a contract using the language model, or we want to change this contract to make this clause, add this clause in, or whatever. Is that kind of a fair example of the kind of ways in which you would utilize the company's data to make people more productive?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's certainly kind of a good use case, and certainly one that we're seeing a lot of value provided. So being able to kind of also being able to kind of scan through quite large kind of policy documents and pull out kind of summarizations of it and kind of key topics. It's a big part of the value that it provides for sure.
Let's say that a business has turned this on. They're using 365 Copilot. When I did, so years back, before it was Microsoft Teams, I did a bit of work on Skype. So part of a team that kind of rolled out Skype for Business across the organization. And one of the things that we realized there, and I think we might have actually spoke about this very briefly when we met in London, which was that some people, when you introduce Skype for Business, some people took to it like a fish to water. They would basically kind of like, you know, they're using the video chat, they're using the instant messages, they're kind of all over it. In the middle of a meeting, they'd fire up a whiteboard and they would kind of like, you know, they'd go to town on it. Some people just were not interested whatsoever. Some people were just, they are absolutely adamant that they wanted to keep their kind of hard phones and they didn't want to use headsets and they didn't really respond to the messages. And so the adoption was net positive, definitely, because more people were using the benefits of the tools than not. But there was still this kind of group of people that just, for whatever reason, part of it because it's change and they don't like change and it's now newfangled technology that they have to get used to or whatever. So there's just a part of the organization that just required some constant kind of like, you know, inspiration and training and stuff like that. Have you noticed the same kind of thing with Office 365? I mean, it seems to me as though it's exciting and it's sort of like, you know, revolutionary in some senses, but there's always pockets of people that are perhaps, you know, not quite as on board. I don't know if your experience has been similar, and how do you help those people to get on board?
Yeah, no, absolutely. A lot of the experiences have been kind of quite similar. I think a lot of sort of where we're kind of focusing a lot of our time in helping organizations kind of roll it out is around that kind of change and adoption piece. So when we kind of run into trials, and they might run one trial or kind of multiple trials or pilots, ensuring that you have a good kind of diverse kind of cross section of your company and cross functional. To ensure that you kind of capture those insights, both kind of capture those insights from different areas of your business, but also hopefully start to build a bit of a champion network in those different areas. And I think that we've seen some kind of great results in sort of building a kind of champion network to then kind of help better promote it amongst their peers and their function and department. I think that kind of the importance of being kind of cross-functional and diverse can't be kind of understated. And I've heard some really kind of great anecdotes of sort of people who have otherwise, maybe when kind of Teams was coming aboard, as you say, or kind of Skype or Yammer or Viva, haven't necessarily engaged, but Copilot, given the kind of value that it provides, and it is quite, using it itself within the applications is reasonably intuitive. Whereas they've kind of previously sort of struggled to kind of gain adoption, have actually jumped into it really quite seamlessly and quite well. Mm. I think the thing to kind of focus on is using it within the applications and kind of accessing it and finding the buttons is kind of reasonably intuitive, and Microsoft have a lot of great kind of learning content around it. So as such, a lot of the focus around the kind of the comms and the training has been around prompting. So kind of creating, understanding how to create good prompts, get the most out of the tool, much like with, I'm sure your experiences with kind of chat GPT, understanding how to kind of write your prompt, explain what you're kind of looking to provide. Quite importantly is give it that kind of context. So which employee or document or chat or email do you want to kind of gain the insights out of, and then sort of frame the information that you want to get out of it. And then I think kind of via those kind of trials, you will understand the benefits that it provides in their day-to-day from an individual basis or from a department basis, and then using those learnings to kind of disseminate that information across the department, I think kind of goes a long way to kind of helping people to kind of get on board. Mm. And being kind of Microsoft 365 tool, making the most of the existing Microsoft 365 tools that they have to disseminate that information. So, you know, Teams channels, Viva Engage, which used to be kind of Yammer, to then sort of share those learnings.
Mm. And is there, I think we probably have covered it because I'm making an assumption here, but is there a use case or a small number of use cases which are the absolute no-brainer go-to starting points? Is it like the email drafting and the document drafting? Are those the kind of like entry points for most people?
Yeah, exactly that. I'd say those are the kind of the main entry points. So it's the meeting recap and minutes saves an enormous amount of time from me. You do have to be, it'd be good to kind of talk about some of the kind of the risk covers, but you do have to obviously be, like when recording any meeting, you have to be kind of careful about when you turn them on. And there's a kind of transcript that's saved off the back of that, of course. There's kind of those first draft of documents, whether that be a kind of Word document or a PowerPoint document, but then also tweaking and refining that content, and then kind of so for instance, obviously in my role, my job, I have lots of kind of meetings and interviews with clients. So being able to use it to help at least kind of give me that starter for 10 on kind of summarizing those conversations, pulling out the kind of key topics, and then using that to kind of then build the reports that I need. And then, as you mentioned, I think in email, I was recently off on holiday and had a nice couple of days off. Coming back, and obviously I've kind of quite a lot of emails to kind of sift through. It's very, very good at kind of generating a kind of quick oversight of what emails I've got and pulling out any kind of key tasks and actions.
That's good. So it can do that. It can do that basically, not on an individual email level, on a inbox level. Then basically,
yeah, exactly. So you can do a kind of cross your full inbox, but then also within the context of your emails, you can, like you can in Word, you can kind of create a first draft. It will give you ideas around ways to improve it. And yeah, depending upon the kind of sentiment or tone that you want to convey.
Interesting.
Obviously, right. I think, and as we've kind of checked GPT and Bard, and whenever you're kind of using it, making sure that whenever you're kind of using, you're kind of generating any of this content, you always kind of review what it's provided. It very helpfully tends to kind of give you the source that it's kind of coming from. So making sure you're kind of checking it's kind of generating from the right sources. And I think that's kind of a lot of where we're kind of helping clients, is helping them set up those kind of key ways of working. And in fact, kind of acceptable usage policies across these tools. Because for lots of companies, this is their first foray into generative AI in the workspace. So I think that's why I find it kind of particularly exciting, because you're sort of, it's kind of starting off these quite exciting conversations for a lot of companies around generative AI and the benefits, but also the risks that it provides.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's usually a good place to start, and lots of folks recommend, and I would in some cases, that a good place to start with AI adoption is internally, because you've got less risk of making a mishap like DPD and Chrysler, etc. And so starting internally can get people on board and stuff like that. With generative AI, seemingly that's even better idea, because you're then teaching them things like prompting, like checking sources, like, you know, getting it ingrained in people's minds that actually these things are not infallible, and that there may be something in here that's not necessarily factually accurate. And so while, yes, it can give you a big boost in terms of productivity, still it's not an excuse to just kind of like write a couple of prompts and then send your contracts out, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And your point about kind of starting internally before then kind of moving into kind of customer services, yeah, definitely times of my experience in kind of EBM, work with a number of companies that tried it out on internal use cases, whether it be IT service management, kind of raising tickets with HR, kind of then building up that internal knowledge to then, and sort of setting the foundations to then kind of moving on to kind of customer service. I think it was quite a key benefit for most organizations with Copilot for Microsoft 365, is you're exploring and enabling your employees to make the most and to kind of get the most out of this technology, but within the kind of comparative safety net of the Microsoft 365 tenancy.
Mm.
So the data that you're inputting into it and using, and the messages that you input, and the kind of responses that you get, all get held within your tenancy. And any information that you input or it uses to generate responses isn't used to then kind of train any foundational models, whether that be kind of external models or indeed the kind of the large language model that Microsoft maintains themselves for the service. So there was a really good study a couple of weeks ago by Salesforce they put out, which was, I think it was like sort of 55% of employees that were exploring generative AI were doing it with ungoverned tools that were not governed by the company, and as such, there have been a few kind of news articles about this, but around kind of employees kind of putting in confidential data, which then kind of goes to train yeah. those kind of foundational models.
It happened with Samsung, didn't it, a couple of months back?
Exactly the one. Yeah, kind of really good example of the benefit of kind of providing these tools, but in that kind of relative safety net and kind of governed by the organization.
Mm, yeah, that's wicked. So we kind of touched on a little bit earlier about the kind of entry point use cases, the things that are kind of like you would expect from Microsoft Copilot. It's going to be in Teams, it's going to be in Word, it's going to be in emails. What are some of the ones that, from your experience of rolling this out, what are some of the use cases that you would have initially going into it thought, you wouldn't have thought about, or, you know, when you found it, you're like, actually, yeah, that's a really interesting one that's maybe not kind of, you know, a less obvious one, so to speak.
That's a good question. Scratching my brain to think of any that I didn't necessarily anticipate.
Or maybe it's not one that you didn't anticipate, but perhaps one that's a little bit less kind of someone who's listening to this right now. You know, you could think straight away of Word and email and something like that, but like, or maybe even within those tools, there may be use cases, like, you know, a specific use case within Word or within email. But what are like, is there any that are sort of like, I don't know, not obvious at first sight that you kind of come across and think, actually, yeah, that's, you know, no one's really talking about this, and that's a really helpful kind of feature, that.
I don't know if it's necessarily one that was kind of unexpected, but to kind of give you to give you an example. So there's a kind of a central team that helps with kind of collecting kind of lessons learned documentation from across their different projects. So they have a kind of that sort of central bank of these documents, so that whenever you're starting a new project, you have all this kind of good information to draw on, and those kind of key learnings to then kind of take forward and improve your project. And Copilot's been able to kind of help out across a couple of key ways there. So first of all, you have a kind of project, you have enormous amount of kind of documentation across, you know, what can be a sort of a project that runs for months or years. And it's really good at sort of taking all that documentation and sort of and pulling it together and summarizing it in kind of quite a clear fashion. So that otherwise quite kind of time consuming task, of which there's lots of opportunity to kind of miss lots of details, has kind of really helped kind of to kind of smooth over and improve that process of then kind of drawing that information into a central place. And then the other side, and another kind of big benefit of Copilot for Microsoft 365, is the findability of information. This also comes onto one of the risks, which I'll touch on, I'll be key to touch on as well. But is it's by understanding your natural language prompt and semantic indexing, it's that much better at kind of retrieving information. So if you ask a particular question around lessons learned on previous projects, it's able to kind of find the relevant documentation, give you those references, and then answer. And then beyond just kind of, you know, the typical search, answer your question directly.
Nice. Yeah, we'll definitely get onto the risks. Before that, so that example you gave there of the, you know, lessons learned documentation from various projects and stuff like that, is the Copilot for Office 365 something that, so for example, a PMO office project management office could say, right, here's all of our lessons learned from all of our previous X years projects. We want to kind of put that into, we want to put that somewhere so that, you know, we can interrogate that when it comes to, you know, scoping our next projects or whatever. Is that something that the business users within the client can do? Like, is there a studio, Copilot studio for 365 where you can just say, right, there's all the documents we want to throw in there and we're good to go? Or is it something that kind of requires the FSPs of the world to kind of constantly be doing the build? Are you doing the build, or is it kind of sort of citizen friendly with it within, I don't want to say citizen friendly as in like anyone can do it, because obviously you need to know what you're doing, but like are these the kind of use cases that companies would go on to then build themselves, or is it something you need to have a special access or certain skills to be able to do?
Yeah, no, absolutely, that's just kind of good. It's quite a good example. So pulling together that documentation via Copilot, users can obviously kind of do themselves. And then as soon as you kind of upload that document and make it available, it's pretty instantaneously available to Copilot to then kind of retrieve that information. The limitation, well, not some. So Copilot from Microsoft 365 will trawl your whole kind of Microsoft 365 tenancy and retrieve back the most appropriate answer, what it feels is the most appropriate answer to your query. There are a number of ways that you can extend Copilot from Microsoft 365 via Copilot Studio. So if you wanted to kind of create a version of it, which apart from anything else is available to people that don't have a license. So for a lot of companies, depending upon their different functions and the benefits they'll see in functions, they'll prioritize those functions. So not everyone will have access to it. So if you want to kind of enable that that functionality of finding documents quickly and easily via kind of your natural queries, there are options to create bespoke copilots for a particular use case with a particular narrow scope. So taking that lessons learned example, narrowing the scope of what it can sort of provide a response to just that kind of document library. And then you can make that available to users via Teams or a kind of widget on the SharePoint page or what have you.
Right. So you could basically make that available to like a, I don't know, a contracted company who's going to do some project management for you, but you don't want to pay for them all to have Teams licenses because they're not your company, but you want to give them access to some things like that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another that kind of leads me on to that there are other ways that you can extend it as well. So as I mentioned, out of the box, Copilot is limited to your Microsoft 365 tenancy, and that may be, you know, what you intend, but obviously lots of companies will also have other document repositories and other data sources that they may want to pull in. So for instance, if you're talking to a kind of a legal company that maintains a kind of separate document a document repository that's kind of industry standard, via kind of graph connectors, you can then kind of pull that information into the graph and as such make it available to Copilot and those kind of native capabilities.
Right.
The other area is in the area of plugins. So again, not everyone will be using all the exclusively the Microsoft 365 tools. You might use Jira for your task management, kind of product management. You might use Bamboo for kind of HR, your kind of HR and recruitment. Via plugins, you can pull in some of those functionalities into the kind of Copilot experience, which is quite exciting really, because you kind of take all these different tools and make it available in sort of one kind of conversational experience.
That's wicked. Yeah. That sounds really good. Yeah. So what about the risks then? We've kind of alluded to some risks. I mean, I suppose, I don't know whether definitely, you know, for a company, let's say you're a bank, everyone's talking about generative AI. You can see quite clearly what the risks are of putting that out in front of the customers, you know, and bias in the models, hallucination problems, you know, these kind of issues are fairly obvious. Internally, with your own data, you've got your own kind of Microsoft environment. Your kind of data's not being used to train the foundation models. Everything's kind of secured. What are the risks from a kind of you know, from your clients' perspectives, what are some of the sort of like, I don't know, hesitations or things that they need to consider as they're going through this kind of this rollout? What are the risks that they need to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think just kind of pick up on one of the first ones, which is around kind of around data security. So as you quite rightly say, everything is kind of is broadly maintained within the Microsoft 365 tenancy. And Copilot doesn't give you permissions to any data that you haven't already kind of got permissions to. However, what it does do is make it so much more easy to kind of get access to that information.
Yes.
Via that kind of much better search experience, understanding your natural query, and then retrieving back from everything you kind of have permissions to. And beyond that, obviously, it kind of then helps you generate content from that information. So much like when, and there's been a lot of kind of comparisons to when Delve came out, which was kind of a feature that kind of gave you a sort of overarching view of all the kind of content you had access to. It tends to kind of uncover any kind of data governance challenges that you might have in your organization. So if there is content that has been overshared, as I say, it doesn't give you any kind of new permissions, but if you have permissions to a document or some information or file that you don't otherwise already, that you shouldn't have access to, it's going to retrieve it that much easier.
Mm.
So a lot of customers will kind of want to do some preliminary things to kind of check that they've got, that they have kind of good data governance and management processes in place, because Copilot actually, as I say, it does kind of, across the sort of experience, it does kind of maintain those kind of data, that those kind of data and security checks along the way. So for instance, if you have a document that's marked as confidential, and then you generate a new document based on that information, that confidentiality label is taken through. You're also like given an alert that document is confidential.
Right.
But if you don't have those kind of processes in place, it's gonna expose some of those kind of challenges.
And is it that you have one Copilot for an organization, and so for example, If I'm a junior, whatever I am, a junior in IT support, I can have potentially, depending on what data is available in Copilot, I could just kind of go into Copilot and say, right, tell me what was spoke about at the last management board meeting, and get access to all of the kind of, you know, stuff like that, that perhaps maybe they don't want the whole company to know about, but they just want, you know, management board specific information. So is that the case where there's one Copilot and anyone can access all the information, or is there behind the scenes some way of, like, I don't know, locking it down so the management board have access to this data repository, whereas HR have access to that data repository, and, you know, like almost like segmenting who can have access to what? I don't know if that's part of what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so that's segmenting and kind of locking down kind of particular content, that's kind of it's making use of the kind of the native kind of permission controls that Microsoft 365 already has. So taking that example of, you have a kind of board meeting and you've got you have a series of board meetings and you have your kind of documentation saved on the outcomes of that, obviously you'd want to make sure that the only people can access that is the relevant people. And as such, if I'm using Copilot and I don't have access to that content, Copilot is not going to retrieve it for me. It very strictly kind of complies with whatever kind of permission setup you've got. I will say as well that actually, if you are to ask like really obvious kind of sort of sensitive questions, like what's the kind of salary of this person, it will give you a sort of an automatic no. But if you don't have those kind of good permissions, and data governance processes in place, and you do have documents with that information, you would have been able to have access that anyway. And if you sort of found your way, or you did a SharePoint search and you retrieved it, you'd be able to find it. It's just that kind of Copilot makes it that much more easy to access.
Yeah.
And I think there's an additional challenge there is if you have kind of compromised accounts or kind of, then it is that much easier to kind of retrieve information, the kind of security processes and mechanisms in place, which Microsoft provide throughout, that's certainly kind of a key consideration.
Yeah, and you're searching within the documents as well, aren't you? So even if you could potentially squirrel your way through the file system in SharePoint or whatever to find the right document, it's going to take you forever because you don't know which one it's in or whatever. Like, whereas this, you can actually search within the documents themselves, presumably.
And I think actually also not just on one of the other kind of challenges is not just on overshared content, but also stale content. So if you have kind of out of date, if you're maintaining lots of kind of out of date content and you're using Copilot to kind of retrieve the latest information, it will provide you the most kind of what it thinks is the most kind of plausible answer. So if you have kind of lots of out of date content, then there's a kind of risk that it will kind of use that content to generate it.
Yeah.
But that kind of comes on to kind of the other kind of key risks is around that it's inappropriately adopted by your employees. So then taking the generated content verbatim, not kind of checking the sources and where it's coming from. So and as such, kind of, you know, prolificating bias and information that isn't correct.
Yeah, especially if you're then going to take that and send it out into SharePoint for it to be consumed again, and you're in a rabbit hole of a rabbit hole of expletives.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
So final question then. Microsoft has had a stab at creating something like this a number of times before, hasn't it? We had Clippy originally. And
Trailblazer.
So like the interface for that was the little clippy thing on a sheet, and you kind of like tap on it and you can talk to it. And then Cortana was kind of intended to be something similar, wasn't necessarily quite as embedded into 365 as I think perhaps Microsoft would have got to if they didn't sort of can it, but that was more like a general assistant that's supposed to interact with your whole computer. Seems to me as though, you know, this Copilot now is finding a better spot, which is let's just focus specifically on doing this job rather than Cortana trying to do everything or Clippy not being capable. But how do you actually interact with it? We've been speaking a lot about sort of like, you know, you can use it for meetings, we can use it for email summaries and Word, and we can use it for finding information and stuff like that. But like, what is the actual interface for someone who hasn't seen it before? Is it kind of a widget that pops up over your screen? Is it at your start option like Cortana was? Like, where do you find it and what does the actual interface look like?
Yeah, so it's embedded across kind of most of your key applications, and depending upon what you're using it for, it's available for you there in context. So to kind of give you some examples, so if you have a team, if you're in a Teams meeting, there's a button at the top that you click, it then starts to kind of record a transcript, and then there's a sort of fly out on the side where you can ask it questions as you're going through the meeting. In Word, and actually, once you finish the meeting, you can then kind of go back to that meeting and then ask kind of questions and interrogate the transcript further. In Word, it's kind of in situ in the document. So there's a kind of box that's there and available to you. You can input your prompt. You can do a /, to kind of reference the documentation that you want. That could be kind of PowerPoint or Excel or other Word documents or emails. And then kind of hit generate, it will generate for you, and you can tweak it and ask it to improve in certain areas. There's also a sort of fly out in Word, so it kind of fly out, and that's where you can sort of ask questions of it as opposed to just generating kind of content in the document. And then the same is true of PowerPoint and Excel, Loop, as I mentioned before. And then there's a kind of general Microsoft Copilot for Microsoft 365 chat. So it's a sort of in the web or in Teams, and you can open that for more kind of if you want to ask queries across all of your kind of data, or and it could be anything from I've been away for a week, give me the latest updates on this project, and it will give you kind of a really good kind of summary of the different documents being worked on, the meetings that have happened, the emails that you receive related to that document. So really quickly bring you up to speed and kind of highlight your key actions. And then just finally, again, on Outlook, you have it kind of in situ in your draft emails, on email threads, if you know when you got like a really, really long email thread and there's loads and loads of kind of conversations, you just want a sort of summary of that and then some of the kind of key actions. But then as I mentioned as well, if you want to kind of, you've been away on holiday and you've got weeks worth of emails and you want to kind of get up speed quickly, it will give you that.
Nice. Makes me think that I need to switch from Mac to Windows and from Gmail to Microsoft.
I tell you what, actually, so I've been an avid Google Chrome user for however many years, but to your point at the beginning around kind of lots of different copilots and some confusion around that, there's a copilot for web which is available in the Edge browser, and a little icon in the top right. And if your company's rolled it out, that information is protected. I've since completely moved over to Edge because of the sort of the availability of that functionality directly within the browser.
Wow, there you go then. So it's not just something that's pretty cool for those that have Windows and Microsoft. It is actually genuinely a competitive advantage that potentially is going to have people ditch other services for it. I mean, I wonder when or if already there's been companies that have decided to kind of move from, say, Google Work to Microsoft specifically to get these kind of benefits. And
it's been a while since I've been working in Google Workspace, but they do have Duet AI, which is right. Like, which is a kind of equivalent to Copilot for Microsoft 365, but I've not explored it very much.
So, yeah,
but no. I think Microsoft, obviously, they invested a huge amount in OpenAI and doing a kind of really great job of integrating that across their services.
Yeah, definitely. And if they didn't have the best kind of employee-based Copilot services, then there would be something not quite right about that whole arrangement.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, nice one. Wicked. Well, Pete, thank you so much for joining me. This has been an absolute pleasure. And I think there's been quite a lot of people tuning in on LinkedIn, actually. I think I'm going to have to start doing these broadcasts a little bit earlier because that was really, really well attended. Thank you all for tuning in. It's been a really interesting episode. Definitely. I mean, as someone who is a Mac user and a Google kind of workplace, it's been stuff that I've been paying attention to, but not in enough detail to be able to actually talk to somebody about it. So really appreciate you, sharing that knowledge and helping educate us all on what it's all about. It's really appreciated.
No, not at all. Hope nice to catch you on another meetup soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you all for tuning in, and definitely do not forget that we have the Unpass tickets that are on sale right now, unpassconf.com, to get your tickets. Early bird sale is still on now, and if you're interested in speaking or sponsoring, hit us up at the website as well, unpassconf.com. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you very soon.